Yehiu l'ratzonim reifeva higyon libi lefenecha Adonai tzuri v'goali. The words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, Hashem our God, my Rock and Redeemer. Welcome everybody. Shalom. We are now going to begin a short little group of classes, which is actually an exploration of Jewish law. We're going to go through the Code of Jewish Law in a specific section with regards to the laws that deal with matters of the occult, what is called the supernatural, and all that other kind of weirdo stuff. This is, again, within the context of our greater Monday night open forums. So the time date is Tuesday, July the 2nd, 2012. I don't know exactly how long this series is going to take. It shouldn't take us too long, just a couple of lessons, I guess. But the reason why I feel this is so important to cover is because there is so much fear and misinformation about occultic forces, dark forces, evil forces, unclean forces, and all the rest of this stuff. We live in a predominantly occult world, where in which spiritual forces of all kinds proliferate and are found everywhere. You find all kinds of secret societies and secret rituals, not all of them bad. You can talk about groups like the Masons. The Masonic lodges have their secrets, which in many ways are very much from mystical sources, in many ways from our own Kabbalistic sources. Well, the nature of interaction with other forces, because I'm not going to, you know, differentiate just yet, obviously it's been going on since biblical times. To put somebody saying, the Masons, the era of Rob. No, the Masons are the good guys. Okay, they're not the bad guys. Whenever you listen to the public forums about all the conspiracy theories, the Masons are behind this, and the Jews are behind that, or the Catholics, or this one, or the Illuminati, or, you know something, shut up. All right, this is all such a bunch of nonsense. To put all conspiracy theories to bed, is there, at least in my opinion, a secret group of people around the world who are pretty much dominating and controlling the world economically and politically? Yeah, I believe there are. And probably thank God that there are. Oh, but they're probably under the power of the devil, you would say. Well, that just opens up now the interesting thing. Because while we are going to discuss now all these things, we're going to talk about the gamut. We're going to talk about seances, Ouija boards, tarot cards, talking to the dead, all that other kind of stuff that people always have such interests about. In order to put all of this in a proper perspective, we have to first understand certain basic principles that we accept spiritually and religiously, and then recognize that I am going to be approaching these things psychologically. I want to talk about the realism of things as opposed to the fantasy of things. Or, in other words, we are going to put to bed, hopefully, all religious fantasy, mythology, superstition, and nonsense. Because ultimately, it's all got to go. So that we can understand the reality of things. As I said, cultic powers have been around forever. What exactly those things are, let's understand. Number one, we throw around terms like supernatural or metaphysical. Let's just understand, let's set the record straight. There is no such thing as anything supernatural. There is no such thing as anything metaphysical. Everything is natural. Everything belongs to its own laws and realms as it does. So then, what is supernatural? What is metaphysical? They're both subjective terms to describe that which we do not understand at present. Think about this, if you will. We are now in the year 2012. Think back, if you can, and if not, go do a little history study. Where science was in the year 1812, just 200 years ago. And look at where we are today. Think. Extrapolate. Fantasize, if you will, where science understandings are going to be in the year 2212. And yeah, I think 2212 is going to come one way or another. And then, you really want to go out? Think about where we will be in the year, in other words, technologically, scientifically, where we'll be in the year, not 2012, but 3012. How far advanced will we be if we succeed not to blow ourselves up and go back to the Stone Age? Where will science and technology take us in the year 3012? Now, my point in saying this is that what we consider today natural, scientific, 200 years ago was considered supernatural, mystical mumbo-jumbo. 200 years ago, you had ballpark about that time, the introduction of Monsieur Mesmer from France, and mesmerism, which was the foundations of hypnotism. It was considered an occultic form, which had people rather frightened by it. Today, we call it hypnosis, and it is a viable, functional, and for some, an integral part of psychotherapy and even psychiatry. We recognize its medical value. It has been transformed. Think about what will be transformed in the future. Today, physics goes out and explores the universe, and today speaks about parallel dimensions and all these other types of realities and existences. Can you imagine if that discussion occurred 100 years ago? What will we be discussing 100 years from now? Again, my emphasis is, what is supernatural, what is metaphysical, are subjective states of where human consciousness and development are at the moment. Now, understand a fundamental principle, all right? Get this straight, because this is a psychological truth, and, our religious truth that I ultimately believe will be shown to be a scientific truth. We say in religion, in old me levado, which is a biblical way of, which means there is nothing other than God. There is only one ultimate reality in existence, and that is God. When you go into the mystical traditions, you'll see it says that God created that which we call the clean side and the unclean side. As it says, Ze le'umat ze asa Elohim. God created them both. Well, from the point of view of that which we call clean, the other side is called what? Unclean. Well, how do you think the unclean side looks at themselves? Do you think they say, oh, we're unclean? We roll in the mud? We're dirty? We worship the devil? No, they don't. Let me tell you something very clear. There is no such thing as a devil. Is there evil? Yes, there is. But who creates evil? All right? God creates that which is bad, but we turn bad into evil. There's a big difference between the two. Somebody in text here is mentioning the angel Samakel. If Samakel is the proverbial Satan, I reference you to the Bible in the book of Job as to the parameters of his power, because this is the fundamental point. The concept of dualism between good and evil duking it out and fighting for control, wherein which God and the devil are fighting for your soul, which is a predominantly Western, actually, I shouldn't say Western, it's shared in both Islamic and Christian theologies, has its historical foundations, not in Judaism, but in other religions, more so Babylonian and Persian in origin. You do not find the character of, in quote, the devil in rulership of hell out there to gather souls that he captures and keeps for himself. No such thing. The book of Job makes it very clear that the accusing angel is as much a servant of God as is anyone else. Now, in that light, take all your conspiracy theories. Is there a real secret world order out there? I believe there is. Notice I said belief. I don't call them Illuminati. I don't call them the Bilderbergs. I don't call them anything. But I do believe that they've probably been around for a very, very long time, probably since biblical times. No, they're not Jews. Good Lord. Why would anybody believe that Jews are in control of the world when Jews are the ones who always get themselves killed? That sounds rather ridiculous to me. You know, but what can I say? Getting back to this. Is there some secret group out there? I believe there is. Who do they report to? Let's say that they are involved with the cult. Let's say that they are very much involved with other intelligences. I see someone again here in text is mentioning the Thule in Nazi Germany. The Nazis were very much an occultic order. The SS was very much an occultic order, very much involved. Adolf Hitler was very much involved. And so much was that involvement that it has burst forth. You will find videos on it online, television programs, books, and everything of the kind. And that continues to this day. But it certainly did not start with the Germans in Germany. But getting to my point, if you have such a conspiracy theory, and if there is this group, and if they're in touch with others, who do you think those others are? Forget about all the speculation. Let's just throw out an idea and say, they're the fallen angels, the Nephilim. Fine. I'll accept that. That's based upon the Book of Enoch. It's got a good foundation to it. You could find a lot of the modern day conspiracy theories fitting into it. Let's leave it at that. Why? Because their identity is not what is of concern here. All right? Because in all due respect, if they got a secret society out there ruling the world, guess who's behind it? Well, you could say these fallen angels. Gotcha. Maybe Samael is one of them. Gotcha. But like the book of Daniel, chapter 4, verse 14 states, everything is by the hand of the watchers. Maybe according to Enoch, these watchers are fallen angels. Got that too. So, the secret society cabal used their occultic powers to contact these groups. Call them, if you will, the Nephilim. Fine. And the Nephilim give them orders to control mankind. Got it. Do you ever ask yourself a question? Who are the Nephilim taking orders from? They're obviously executing things like they're passing it on. Oh, they're taking their orders from the devil. All right, you want to say that, so be it. Who do you think the devil's taking their orders from? The answer is God. Like I've always said to you, don't ever fret Big Brother, because Big Daddy is watching Big Brother. There's only one power, one control, one author, and that's it. There is nothing to be afraid of. If God went and created the other side, then they have just as much a right to be who they are and what they are as we do. We call ourselves clean, we call them unclean. I don't think they call themselves unclean and call us clean. They say we are who we are, you are who you are. And that's that. And there's a lot of details with regards to these other forces. Now, in the Jewish Magic Tradition course, I have taught this material in detail. And the topic of tonight from this Code of Jewish Law, I've covered briefly in both classes. So for those of you who want to proceed in the Jewish Magical Tradition Semester 3 coming in the fall, I have offered the first and second semesters at a significantly reduced price online. And of course, for those of you who are in this class tonight, if you have not yet taken advantage of it, I offer you both classes for the low price, $200, reduced from the original $700. Can't get better than that. Take advantage of it if you have not already. But only tonight, those of you listening live till tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, that's Tuesday the 3rd, 9 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Don't contact me afterwards and say, can I get it at the discount? No, you can't. Do it now if you want it. But anyway, moving right along. It's important that when we discuss matters of what is called the occult, and you want to talk about seances, and you want to talk about Ouija boards, and you're going to talk about this, and you're going to talk about that, and we look at these things in light of the biblical prohibitions against three words, Kishuf, Onan, and Nachash. Alright? That's the foundation of these laws. They mean certain things. And if we don't understand what these things are, then we will never understand what the laws are. And I might add, in the Jewish point of view, these laws are universal. Because what they are doing is endeavoring to enlighten us, educate us, and protect us. Because there are forces out there who, in all due respect, do not look at humanity in our present state as a high and elevated species, but rather as a low and depraved species. And in all due respect, the way many people act in this world, what are you going to say? So, that's that. Now that I've put everything in its foundational source, let's talk about these things. Code of Jewish Law, written in the 1500s by Rabbi Yosef Karo. He is considered, and this book is considered to be the authoritative code. Now, the one thing about the laws here is, even though they are written, you should know one thing about Jewish law. No one book of Jewish law is the definitive, final answer in anything. Every expression of Jewish law since Rabbi Yehuda, the prince himself, the author of the Mishnah, are matters of opinions, called in Hebrew de'ot. And therefore, what we have are a preponderance of different opinions, de'ot. Rabbi Yosef Karo concluded his de'ot in the form of his set table, Shulchan Aruch in Hebrew. It is considered to be one of the most foundational and established codes of law, and therefore it's considered the most authoritative at this time. There are earlier codes and there are later codes. Those which came before him, those which embellished and added to him. But on the Code of Jewish Law, in every published volume, there are commentaries which question the words, expand on the words, challenge the words, change the rulings. You cannot understand the code without the commentaries. And therefore, we are obviously going to get into both. Because, like with everything in law, you must understand what the foundations are so that you can understand the expressions of the opinions, the de'ot, based upon where that opinion is coming from and what its relationship to the letter of the law is. Now, the laws here referred to in this second section of the Code of Jewish Law called Yorei De'ah. We are in section 179. It says, Shelo l'kashef le'onen u'l'nachesh, that it is considered to be prohibited to cast sorcery, to tell one's fortune, or to the word nachesh is a very interesting word. Some might tell to try to invoke or seek powers or insights into the future. Some call it an interpreter of signs. The word is obviously related to and based upon the Hebrew word nachash, which means serpent. So it means you're forbidden to serpentize. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means pretty much what we would today call pursuing avenues of contact with certain other non-human races for the sake of interactions for improper reasons. Remember, the form that the fallen angel in the Garden of Eden took was the form of the serpent. Ancient legend tells us that the serpent in the Garden of Eden stood erect, had arms and legs, was able to speak, and it is clear from the biblical story, certainly did not pose itself to be in any ways a danger or a threat or in any ways looked evil to Adam and Eve. They were very open and seems natural that they interacted with it, spoke with it, talked about it, confided in it. It was different because the word Nahash, serpent, is also related to another Hebrew word, Serach, which can be interpreted as either serpent or burning. There is a type of an angel called the burning angels, the Seraphim. We read about them in Isaiah chapter 6. It is understood, for those who know the matters of angels, that there is a group of angels who are reptilian in nature. And we speak about them in the Sefer Yetzirah course. They're referred to as the Tili, the dragons. The dragons are a very powerful race. They are pretty much in control of this universe by God's design. They are the watchers spoken of in Daniel. They are the good guys, except that a few of them became bad guys. And it was one of them who became the bad guy in the Garden of Eden. And it's kind of interesting to question why and how and what that was all about, but that's topic for another story. And in that respect, with regards to them, one of theirs became bad, and that sent the entire, what we call archetype, image of the serpent and anything reptilian to be bad. In all of most cultures, with few exception, Chinese culture and ancient cultures, ancient as Israel, recognized that there was a holy reptilian, a holy dragon, just as it was recognized and understood in Judaism. And certain Mesoamerican cultures also recognized that prior to the serpent becoming bad, there were good ones. Now, I see somebody in text here is making reference to modern day politics and presidents of the United States. Please don't go into such nonsense pointing fingers at either President George Bush or President Barack Obama or anybody of the kind. Please stay away from all this distraction and nonsense. You're going to think, well, these guys are involved in secret societies. Everybody's involved with everything, okay? The bottom line, it is only God in heaven who decides who is to be a leader of a nation. Here in these United States at this time, we know the president is Barack Obama. Now, Mr. Obama represents positions and ideas and views that many of us who are traditionally religious would disagree with. Fine. But you want to know what? God put Mr. Obama in charge of this country. And it will be God who will decide the November elections whether Mr. Obama should remain as president or a new president should be put in office. And in spite of however much we might vote and do everything, we do what we have to do from our side, but God's going to do what God does. Remember, it was God and no one else who allowed people like Nebuchadnezzar, the destroyer of the temple, not only to rise to power, but to act in the way that he did. Remember, God is the author of all things. And that's what we must always understand. So when we want to talk about things of the nature of we are, interaction with the different races and species, why? What's the purpose behind it? Remember, the Torah is very clear that it's prohibited to contact the dead. It is considered idolatry to worship the other gods. Well, understand that by definition, if the Torah prohibits contacting the dead, then obviously contacting the dead must be something that's possible to do, as we learn with the story of King Saul and his contact of Shmuel, the prophet, who was in the spirit world. But that also has to be understood, because it's not like what people think. And another thing, the other gods, if there were no other gods with a lowercase g, then there would be no prohibition against worshiping them. God's not going to make laws for us about things which don't exist. So for those people who are of the philosophical opinion that none of these things are real, none of these things exist, it's all imagination, well, no, it's not. And science and psychology proves that it's not. So with no further ado, with a very long introduction, let's get involved in our text. Code of Jewish Law opens with these words in section 1 of 179. Ein shoalin b'chozin b'kochavim v'lo b'guaralot. It says, we do not inquire or ask of seers, the stars, or in what's called here goralot, lotteries. Alright? A seer, someone who can gaze into the future. Stars, plotting horoscopes. Goralot, specific tools and techniques which are used to help us predict a path into the future. Now, a couple of things. The opinion here is expressed by Rabbi Yosef Karo is in itself rather interesting, because not everybody agrees with it. Not everybody observes it. And certainly not everybody practices according to what he wrote. Rabbi Yosef Karo himself was a master of the prophetic meditative tradition. He himself had regular contacts with an angelic guide that he would access channeled literature. In other words, Rabbi Yosef Karo would go into a trance, his eyes would like roll up into his head, and all of a sudden words would come out of his mouth in a different voice. This was called his magid, his spiritual guide, and he and his students kept a record of the revelations of this guide, and it has been written, it's available today, even an English translation, to let you know of the channeled literature of the author, the greatest code of Jewish law written. So, what is the foundation when he says we do not go looking towards seers or the stars or these lotteries, as they're called? Now, these lotteries are actually biblical in origin, but you have to go into the Rabbi Moshe Isserles, he is the guy who wrote the additions to the Code of Jewish Law, an Ashkenazi contemporary of Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Sephardic rabbi. And it's together the two of them which form the code of the text. So he writes here, the reason why we don't do these things is because of the biblical verse that states, Tamim tiyeh im Hashem Elokechem. You shall be simple and pure before the Lord your God. Alright? Well, what does that mean? Well, understand the context of what Rabbi Karo is saying here. We're not looking to predict or foresee the future. Not by going to a seer who can see it, not by looking at the stars to plot a horoscope, or not by using any kind of a tool to specifically find out the future, because be simple before God. What's the relationship? Well, you wouldn't understand the relationship outside of philosophy until quantum physics came along in recent times. What has quantum physics showed us? That the nature of reality prior to its observation is rather unhinged, not solidified, or in other words, existing in a state of potential prior to it being actual. This is foundational to our Torah faith. that ultimately all things are in the hands of God, and that anything at any time can take any turn. Like we say in the words of our prayers, "Hamechadesh betuvo b'chol yom ma'aseh bereshit," that God renews at every moment the work of creation. Remember, even light flows in a wave, and waves have its high and its lows, and then particles, boom, 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 boom. And at any time, in between particles, God can interact, and as quantum physics and others now talk about, all kinds of parallel universes. The problem with fortune-telling of any kind, trying to predict the future, violates this fundamental natural law that we try to lock in a future, a potential into actuality before the actuality actually manifests. That is wrong. That is prohibited by our law. Why? Hey, gee, can I lock in something positive? You don't know what to lock in. You don't know what is positive. Gee, can't I just lock in my winning the lottery? Winning a couple $1,000,000? I mean, what could be wrong with that? What could be wrong with that? You don't know now, do you? Because we do not have the wisdom, the insight. Like King Solomon, blessed of God. Why? Because rather than ask for power, he asked for wisdom. And only with wisdom can you wield power. The problem with us today is we seek power without wisdom. So, the prohibition is foreseeing the future to manipulate the flow and course of time and destiny. That is what is wrong. We should not, must not, never must do that. If you will notice about biblical prophecy says a lot of things, but a point that is made clear by every student and commentator of biblical prophecy is, gosh, we don't understand really what the heck it all means, especially when it comes to messianic stuff, simply because we don't know precise detail how things will unfold, when they will unfold, what is the order, why? Because things exist in a potential state, in a quantum state of multiple parallel fulfillments. Which part of which will happen depends upon the eye of the observer, as quantum physics would say, or us. So therefore, rather than trying to pick and choose and lock ourselves into a future which does not have to be because we don't have the wisdom to foresee its pros and cons, the Torah says fundamentally, don't do it. Allow nature to unflow and take its course. Live simply and purely. Be righteous. And don't try to create a scenario. Rather, allow God to guide and direct. So therefore, the Haggah also says that it's forbidden to ask of those who are called kosamim, minachashim, and nechashapim. A kosam, that's someone who goes into a trance and through such trance predicts the future. Now Rabbi Yosef Karo himself was the master of trances, but nowhere in his work do we find predictions and foresights of the future. Now, who is a man in modern time who went into trances all the time, predicted the future? Very famous, Edgar Cayce. Now, I've read Edgar Cayce, and Mr. Cayce was profound in many a way, but that which he predicted for the future never came true. I remember reading clearly in one of his books, he says that 1968, Atlantis would rise off the Atlantic coast. Well, to this day, I haven't seen Atlantis yet. unless we're talking about, you know, the what is it, that hotel resort in the Bahamas or whatever, but no. He meant something else, obviously. Now, many people reinterpret and blah, 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 but, you know, forget that. No. Mr. Casey was not a prophet. He never spoke in the name of God. He was here, what we call a Kosem, trying to use his, and actually did, his trances to communicate future events. But the future events were for or from what dimension? Not ours. No need for that. A minachesh. That's is traditionally called an interpreter of signs. You know the signs, don't you? That's what we're going to get into in the next couple of things here, next couple of sections here. Judaism is emphatically anti-superstitious. And I'm about to contradict that, but nonetheless, that's what it's supposed to be. Not to believe nonsense that because this happened, it must mean that. No, it doesn't. It doesn't have to mean that at all. And a mechashef is what we would call a sorcerer, a warlock. These are people who have actual and real focus and power to manipulate things, possibly through other earthly sources, earthbound spirits, nature spirits, fallen angels, and the like. There are many times you can make pacts with these, and you serve them and they serve you. We're told not to do that because that alters the natural way. If we remember in the days of Noah, the fallen angels came down and introduced to humanity all different types of technologies. How curious that we find in modern day conspiracy theories about otherworldly entities coming down and giving us technologies. Gee, it sounds just like the days of Noah. True, false? Who knows? But the correlation is real. Now, we don't ask about any of these to know the future, because the future is unwritten and is meant to be. But in the classical commentary here called the Sifte Kohen, the words of the Kohen, the mouth of the Kohen, lips of the Kohen, I should say, he brings down an interesting side note that with regards to predicting the future, we do not ask of any of these people. That would actually be considered prohibited by the Torah itself. However, what would happen if somebody is sick? What happens if someone has a terrible illness, can't find medical cure? Can they go to one of these psychic intuitives? Edgar Casey was known more so as a healer than he was a predictor of the future. Could you, by this law, go to the likes of an Edgar Casey, who through a psychic reading could interpret what your illness is, define it and describe it, and therefore help you medically? According to the Sifte Kohen commentary, quoting other earlier sources, they said, absolutely, yes. That the prohibition to predict the future is one thing, but consulting with these others for areas, especially where in which there's a danger of life, that's something completely different. No, it does not say that you're going to these guys for healing, even though many of them might know healing. Edgar Casey was profound that he would be able to diagnose illnesses. There are other people who are psychic today who have that gift? Question mark? No. When there is an issue and question of life, that is not an issue. So you see here, there are parameters to the understandings of the law. And therefore, under the circumstances, it would not be considered prohibited for someone who is sick, deathly ill, not deathly ill, let that be discussed, to go to one of these Edgar Casey types. Now, of course, there are different opinions. There are those who say, no, you don't even go to that, even for someone who is sick. But actually, the commentary quotes here, the Zohar, says you don't go to a mechashef, to a warlock or a wizard, for a diagnosis or for a matter of healing. Again, that's not accepted by everybody, but it is an opinion, as everything else is. And indeed, we find that when it comes to matters of illness, anything that takes to save life, as long as it's not outright idolatry, is considered to be okay. And for all different reasons, which I guess we'll discuss as we proceed. But remember something. We're not turning to the devil. Why? Because there is no devil. We're not turning to evil forces who are out to ensnare your soul and trap you to hell. Why? Because there's no such thing. We are talking about the people, human beings, who have contact with other forces in this planet, in this universe, in this world, who, for lack of a better reason or purpose, just let's say, they themselves have access to higher information, and their involvement with us disseminating that information is prohibited by spiritual law. So, for example, if I were to go and contact United States Air Force Intelligence, and I went and I spoke to an intelligence officer, and I say, I order you in the name of whatever, whatever, to reveal to me all the secret files on Area 51 and alien contact and Roswell and the like. And that Air Force intelligence officer spilled the beans and told me everything. And I said, gee, now I have this knowledge. Well, number one, that Air Force officer might get in trouble for violating his mandate of silence. And number two, now that I knew these secrets, I would be placing myself in danger. Apply that example to, if you will, invoking angels or knowing the future or other entities. Yeah, you could, if you will, symbolically saying, twist their arms to reveal to you things. But for what purpose? And once you have access to information and knowledge, does that put you in violation? That, remember, is the issue here. We are meant on this world to walk simply before God. We are here to be tested for our morals, our character, and our righteousness, and not to cheat our way through. You want access to wisdom? Wisdom will be granted. That is why many of the tools for things like divination are not used for the sake of predicting the future, but rather for the sake of acquiring wisdom. Recently, I wrote an essay, which I published on koshertorah.com, entitled Psychological Divination, in which I made a comment that things like tarot cards, the Chinese Yi Jing, and many other of these divination tools can be used in a proper format. But what is the definition of proper? Not for the sake of predicting the future or anything of the kind, but rather as a psychological tool for self-exploration. And I want to introduce you here to the ideas and concepts of the famous founder of analytical psychology, the famous psychiatrist Carl Jung. Now, remember, Dr. Jung was a scientist, not a philosopher. He explored the depths of the human mind, human consciousness, and was able to discover scientific understandings of human consciousness, a collective unconscious which all humanity share. Things which at one time were considered occultic or magic, Dr. Jung was able to extract from its fantasy and enable us to understand it scientifically. He looked at things like the pursuits of alchemy, Kabbalah, the supposed occult, even things like tarot cards and the I Ching, and recognized a psychology to them, how the human mind interacted with these things psychologically, and was able to understand them in a way which made us understand that these are tools for self-exploration and not tools of some mystical or magic, not tools of evil or the dark side or the devil, because remember we said there's no such thing. Evil? Of course there's evil. But even evil, again, serves God. We are told stay away from evil. A tool to help us open up the attachment that we have to our own unconscious, you can call it meditation, This has been taught in biblical Torah, in Judaic circles, since biblical times. I have courses online at koshertorah.com on how to acquire one's spiritual guide from ancient sources. It's available for you if you want to learn these things. Meditative courses, all there for you who want to learn these things. Now, my emphasis is the purpose of learning all these things is for the sake of acquiring wisdom and insight. When Rabbi Yosef Karo was channeling his higher energy source, his angel, what was given to him wasn't predictions of the future, but revelations into the nature of the Torah, wisdom, insights into himself. It was a tool for self-exploration. Anything can be used as a tool for self-exploration. In modern psychology today, they have what is known as the Rorschach, the inkblot test. Many of you might not have seen. Many of you might have seen it. It's online, I'm sure, if you haven't. And if you look at the cards, it looks like a bunch of ink. And they ask you, what do you see in it? And you say this, and the other person says that, and the third person says something else. Why? Because what you're doing is projecting from the unconscious, which doesn't know how to properly express itself, using imagery, just like we do in dreams, to therefore verbally express ideas and concepts that the psychologist or psychiatrist who's properly trained looks at your answers and says, gee, why do you see here a person shaking a banana in a snowstorm in Hawaii? I don't know. That's really weird. That's obviously an example. But many people see many different things. The tarot cards, for example, have 22 images of curious characters in curious positions. And what is the interpretation of each one is completely subjective to the individual who's looking at it, just like a Rorschach inkblot test. Now, you can go online and look at all these books, tarot cards, for example, and every one of them will give you general ideas of what each picture is supposed to mean, and then when they get into details, everyone's different from everybody else. No one is wrong, and everyone's right, because it's all projective. I'll give you another example. Something that gets a lot of the modern rationalists nuts. In the mystical traditions dating back from Qumran, because we find references to this in the Dead Sea Scrolls, and especially elaborated in the later Kabbalah, we find in the Zohar and other literature, palm reading, reading the signs of the lines in your hand. Now, I'll tell you this. I've seen books where in which people say, this is your lifeline, this is your wisdom line. But if you go look at lines, you can't give a class in an analytical sense of how you measure lines like you would in an algebra problem. You read lines like you read the tarot, like you read a Rorschach. There is nothing mystical here. There's nothing spiritual here. It is all psychological of how your mind project into these things. And you have general categories which the mind clings to and then projects into. And from that, you can gain wisdom. That's why none of these things should be frightened or anything of the kind. Now, we'll get into other things as we proceed. But I think where I'm at right now, you understand. Psychology is meant to enlighten, to open our minds to deeper insights of truth. What we must emphatically avoid is superstition, fears, and fortune telling. If you read tarot cards to predict the future, sorry, in my opinion, you're a fool. Because that's not what it's really all about. Read Carl Jung on it. Alchemy, Kabbalah. I see so many people try to use numerology, to try to make all kinds of points about when the Messiah is coming, who the secret identity of this one and that one is. All numerology is a game. Because I can make any number of anything mean anything, and it's all right. And it's all wrong. Why? Because it's in the eye of the beholder. That is the quantum nature of reality. That's why even Jewish law is in the eye of the beholder, or what we call deot, opinions. Now granted, we have practices of how we observe things, which is to our tradition. We call that halakha, the way you're supposed to go. But halakha is based upon what we call din, the law. And anyone who is a scholar of Jewish law knows there are fundamental things which are the black and white issues of Jewish law, and then all the later embellishments which came, which are the traditions and the practices that we observe called halakha. And they're not always the same. And that's just the way it is. With that note, let's go into the second section here, which is going to introduce to us something curious. In section 2, it states here, Nohagu, which means our traditional observance is, She'in matchilin b'sheni o b'revi'i ve'in nosin nashim ela b'melui elevena. Remember I told you about superstitions, how we're supposed to avoid them? Well, got to take a step backwards here, because Rabbi Caro states, the tradition is you don't begin anything, right, on either a Monday or a Wednesday. Because the astrological forces of those 2 days, which are the Moon and Mercury, were considered to be negative. You telling me I'm supposed to be concerned about astrology? Well, Rabbi Yosef Caro doesn't say it's forbidden. He doesn't say it's required, but he does says that's the tradition. And then, here is a tradition that he states, we do not do this other than, I'll translate, we only perform marriages with the fullness of the moon. Oh boy, that opens up a can of worms. Oh my goodness. Marriage, the union, full moon, that relationship and association goes back to nature wisdom, nature worship. Gosh, if I mention this to anybody who knows witchcraft or Wicca, they nod their head and says, but of course. And here it is, told by the rabbi in Jewish law, that this was what was practiced because it was the tradition. In all due respect, I don't know anybody in any Orthodox circle today who observes this. We are not superstitious in the fact that we don't start things on a Monday or a Wednesday. We certainly have weddings and marriages all times in a month. But for those who are cautious to Rabbi Caro's admonishment, this is what they do. Now remember what I said about the difference between law and tradition. Not everybody observes what Rabbi Caro says here. Indeed, most people don't. But now, let's turn to the Haggaz, it's called, the editions where Rabbi Israelis, who comments and states, V'lachen, therefore, Nahagu gamken lahatchil l'mod b'rosh chodesh. Another tradition of an auspicious time is to begin sessions like of learning at the new moon. Again, notice the nature connection there. Now, we just said that the prohibition, biblical, called nechush, is to look for auspicious times. Well, wait a second. Didn't we just say that Mondays and Wednesdays are bad times and new moons are good times? No. Don't look at that as being some kind of a biblical thing of predicting good or bad times. We just say it's a good sign. What's the difference between a prediction and a good sign? Well, we'll discuss that as we move along, but they are distinct. And listen to this. B'ma she'adam yodea shehu neged hamazal lo yase v'lo yismoch alanes mishum But don't go looking for him, because it says, be simple before God. Let's talk real quick in the concluding time of this class about astrology, a topic which I covered in depth in our second semester of the Jewish magic traditions. Again, if you want the course, you email me and I'll work out arrangements for you. The Talmud states that in biblical and post-biblical times, Jewish sages were renowned in the ancient world as masters of astrology. Astrology, like Carl Jung clearly shows, is a psychological science. And anybody who tries to use it for fortune telling is severely, definitively proven wrong. That was said by the biblical prophets, and it's said today. That doesn't mean that you can't use the charts to show influences, positive and negative and the like. So what Rabbi Isserles is saying, what a person knows is astrologically non-auspicious, he shouldn't do. Because we consider going against a known astrological prohibition, an astrological inclination, going against it, he says, is relying on a miracle. Now, for me, I believe that astrology has validity. How? Not to predict the future. Remember, we said about that. We don't predict futures. But I do believe that somehow, somewhere, relationships and patterns of stars project somehow some type of cosmic energies through the universe, which obviously bombard our Earth at every moment. And the relationship of our Earth to the relationship and positions and patterns of these cosmic energies, I believe somehow have an effect upon human consciousness, the human mind, very much at the unconscious level. Now, from my own experience, I have plotted people's astrological charts, never for the sake of predicting their future, but actually to diagnose their personalities. And I've always found such diagnoses to have significance. So, what your sun sign is, your birth hour is, your birthday is, does have an influence on the nature of your personality. It doesn't predict your future, but it does help us understand you. So therefore, anything that we know, we should be cautious of, aware of. And therefore, if you deny that which you know, it's considered relying on a miracle. And our sages say we don't rely on miracles. If God chooses to give a miracle, that's his business. But we can't snap our fingers. Yo, God, right? I think I'm going to jump off a cliff because I trust in you that the ground will turn magically into a sponge. I really wouldn't suggest it just in case that rock 100 feet down doesn't turn into a sponge. Again, Rabbi Isserles says we don't go and investigate these things to try to find them out. Rather, be simple. But if you know, then be aware. It's interesting because you must understand the nature that through the centuries, this is where the mindset of people have always been. Even in Christian circles, in the Catholic traditions for thousands of years, they knew of this stuff too. This is why Nostradamus, another Jew, who is also trained in the same prophetic traditions as was Rabbi Yosef Karo, they were contemporaries, and there's even a story out there that says they might have trained together from the same teacher at the same time, meaning they might have known one another through some connection in Salonika, Greece. But that, I don't think, can ever be proven. But anyway, Nostradamus hid the source of his spiritual stuff, not because of any accusations of the occult, but rather associations with Judaism. But Nostradamus the Jew, as he clearly was, hid the way that he did because, again, association to the Jews, and at the same time, to the day he died, was held in high respect in Catholic circles. Indeed, these spiritual forms were always held in certain respect in Catholic circles. And it's only when the Protestant came along that they completely distanced themselves from any of these things. And with the exception of certain spiritual movements in certain sections in Europe, and then later in the United States, a spiritual and or mystical Protestantism would have been unknown and unheard of. So, that is a story for another time. All right, I've gone over the time for tonight. I hope I've given you enough grounding and foundation. As you see, we got a lot of material to cover here. But it's not just enough for me to read to you what it says and then explain it to you. I want you to understand the foundations. I want you to recognize the psychological parameters of things and to do what needs to be done. This is why I'm trying to break down these walls of taboos which are based upon fantasy and fear. There's nothing to be afraid of. If you pursue God, you'll pursue enlightenment and wisdom. And again, I give the example of tarot cards because I learned them first time, surprisingly, in Jerusalem from an old Moroccan in the Shuk of Machne Yehuda, and then from when I was at the Jungian Institute. How is a Ouija board different from tarot? Because a Ouija board can put you in touch with other spirits and entities who you don't necessarily need to be talking to. But that's another time. We'll talk about Ouija boards and seances in the next class. But, for example, the tarot, as I said, works in the same way as the Rorschach of psychology. You can use anything in this matter. You can look and gaze at pictures in a magazine or on the internet and ask yourself the question, what does this mean to me? Why am I seeing this now? It, the moment, now, has a connection and a meaning for me. This is what Carl Jung called synchronicity. Again, I see a question in text, are pendulums forbidden? Pendulum is the little thing that you swing on a chain, and it goes right and it goes left, and you answer questions yes or no. Well, what are you asking? About the future? To make a decision for you? The nature of the question, therefore, prohibits it. If you're asking things about insight, use it as a tool for self-discovery as opposed to prediction. See if it works for you. I've tested and tried all of these things. And I've recognized, for example, when I do pastoral counseling, for years and years I would plot people's charts to see what they were like. And it always worked, because it helped me understand the nature of the person I was dealing with in counseling. But no predictions, no future, nothing of the kind. All right, you can't hear it, I don't think, but it's starting to thunder here in Tennessee at this moment. And with our satellite uplink to the internet, thunderstorms mean loss of signal. So I'm going to get off before we get kicked off. So I'm going to conclude tonight's class. Thank you all for joining me. God be willing, we'll continue our studies of the law and what it really means and what we can really do. Thank you all for joining me tonight. Again, I'm your host, Ariel Bartzadok. Find me online at koshertorah.com. See you all, God be willing, in our next class. Thanks again for joining me. Good night. Shalom.